The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
Time for the week trending now. I'm delighted to be joined by Irish Times columnist Roe McDermott and Dave Hanratty, host of the Law & Core podcast. And we've lots to talk about, but there's a story gone up today on the Business Post website about a man called Ray O'Donoghue, who was the director of the Donegal Music Festival C Sessions, who has taken up the role as the nighttime economy advisor to Dublin City Council. Some people are calling him the night mayor. You quite correctly, Dave, said night czar is a better way of actually putting it. To do what, do you reckon?
To take control of the social problem that we have when it comes to nightlife. And by that, I mean not having enough places to go and extending opening hours, that kind of thing. You're seeing an awful lot of kind of reports in the media lately saying, you know, look, there's been a lot of drag on this. I mean, like, if you look back to when this was first suggested, Catherine Martin laid out this massive report. It was September 2021. So it's taken 3.5 years to get to even this point of having a night czar. I do love saying that word. It's good to have a night czar. It sounds like a villain or something to come into play. But there's just been so much drag on this. I mean, and I'm seeing like these reports this week saying, if we do this, if we extend the hours, we're going to turn Ireland and Dublin into ancient Rome. And it's like, it's not necessarily like that. That will be the problem. If you look at other European cities, which are much more cosmopolitan, et cetera, which we apparently aspire to be, you know, you have to give people the option of, you know, going out until whatever time, like nightclubs closing when they close here versus when they close in Central Europe. So this is, but there's so many blockades to this, but it's not going away. And I feel bad for people in, like, say, the Give Us the Night campaign who've been fighting for this for so long and made so little progress.
Yeah, we had Sunil Sharp in last week about this. But, Ro, I'm very interested in this particular, because I'm of a generation, I no longer want to be out till 3 and 4 or 5 in the morning. But I do think that I enjoyed my relative youth, my early adulthood, with many a late night in Leeson Street and the illegal clubs of the time, in Lily's Bordello and Reynard's, all the various spots, and even down the country, and I go home to Cork. You like to go out for the night and stay out. And what is it that it seems that older politicians now are determined to deny that to younger people, and then in turn that younger people seem determined to deny it to themselves?
Well, there's younger people, so I came of age in like the Celtic Tiger, so like 15 years ago, and there were so many clubs and bars where you could go dancing. Like, you had your pick of places, and I wasn't a huge partier. I didn't drink, but I loved going out for a dance, and I didn't want to miss out on anything. And so I have so many memories of going out with my friends and having just mischievous nights out. But I'm in my 30s now. I still like going for a dance. I mightn't be staying out till 4 in the morning anymore, but I want to go. And there are so few spots for people who are a little bit older. I always end up going to the George or Penny Lane, which are gorgeous spots to go for. But we need spots for people of all ages. And I think the point about people, you know, hand-wringing over bars staying open late, I think that's actually so much better, because I remember the hedonism of when everybody got kicked out of a bar at 2:30 and it was everybody was on the streets and it was a nightmare.
Sorry, that happens now at 12:30 in the evenings.
Completely.
At weekends, and you're battling to get taxis, or you're having to walk a long way to try and pick up public transport somewhere, and you're worried about what's going on around you. And the whole plan initially about having a great, better nighttime economy was to even out so people could go with their relaxed at their own times, not all be finishing at the same time.
But I have friends who live outside of Ireland, and a lot of them would say, oh, we'd love to come to Dublin, like, where will we go? And I really struggle to tell them where is a good place to spend a night and go for a dance or go for a party, because those spots don't exist. And walking through town, you know, after midnight on a weekend, it's desolate. It's like a McCarthy film. It's really eerie. And so I think you need to give people opportunities to come together, and particularly for Gen Z, who aren't watching the same things because they can watch everything they want on streaming. They're not socializing the same way, and there's a huge loneliness epidemic after COVID that we keep talking about, but then we keep selling cultural centers to people who want to build hotels, and we're taking these opportunities away from Gen Z to gather, to have fun, to socialize, to reclaim that time that they lost during COVID. It's really damaging on a societal level, and so that's why I think it's really important. I will say, poor Ray O'Donoghue, if anything goes wrong, he's going to be called the Nightmare, and I just see the headlines.
That's pretty good, though.
Dave, here's a listener who says, this is a terrible idea. Irish people don't know when to call it a night. The hospitals are overcrowded and understaffed. This will only add to the issue, along with the huge shortage of Gardaí to keep people safe. This idea needs to be shut down. Now, I can understand that there already is a lack of Gardaí on the streets at all times of the day and the evening, but you know, everyone goes on about the alcohol issue. Doesn't it lead a lot of the time to house parties where there's an awful lot more cocaine and other drugs been taken, and excessive alcohol consumption that might not happen in pubs and nightclubs. But the reason why pubs and nightclubs were brought about in the first place was actually as a way to moderate the intake of alcohol.
Like, the idea doesn't need to be shut down, but it does need to be, I guess, properly structured and actually adhered to. And I think when it comes to like situations like this, everyone imagines like it's just going to be St. Patrick's Day every single night. And that's, we don't know that.
I mean, people don't have the money to
do that's another
that.
Thing. I mean, like who could possibly go out 7 nights in a row like and keep doing that? I'm sure there's one plucky soul who could, but it ain't me. You know, like I this isn't even like for me. Like, I'm not, I don't want
to. Well, you could do it, but you suffer the next week.
Yeah, like I'm done. Like, I don't have the stamina anymore myself, but like lots of people do. Why should they be denied these spaces? I don't think it's automatically going to lead to violent altercations across the country. That is the extremist view. I think if you actually kind of apply sensible techniques to this, it could work. But to say let's not do it is just so behind the times.
But also the assumption that bringing people together and giving people places to go and places to dance and places to gather and places to have gigs is going to lessen our dependence on alcohol is absolute nonsense. Look at COVID. The numbers of people who developed issues with alcohol because they were alone. They were lonely. They felt disconnected from people and their drinking became problematic. Yes, we have a drinking culture. So does America. That doesn't mean that you decimate cultural spots and opportunities for people to gather. It means you need to give us more of them, and you need to give us more opportunities to gather in a non-alcohol focused way as well. You don't improve people's mental health and community by eliminating spaces to gather. You improve it.
Okay. Given that you do movies for us on a regular basis, tell us who says the Barbie movie was emasculating.
Oh, Shakira. Oh, Shakira, who is now
who you clearly do not agree with.
Shakira's statements, who are now ensuring that like Ben Shapiro and a lot of very angry men on Reddit are just feeling utterly engorged. Shakira came out and said she took her sons to the Barbie movie and she became, they felt emasculated by it. And she is using this as proof that the Barbie movie didn't deserve all the awards that it needed. She also went on a rant about how women need to keep their feminine energy and there is a place for women and they compliment men, but we might need to, you know, stay true to our essential energies. No, this is absolute nonsense. And I think what's so interesting is if your boys feel emasculated by a movie, I'm sorry, but as a parent, that's on you and not the movie, because you're obviously not discussing what masculinity should be. You're not addressing their feelings. And two boys' feelings about a movie is not women's problem to solve Greta Gerwig's problem to solve.
They're 11 and 9 years old, respectively. Are they really throwing around the world the word emasculated? I don't know. I think it's one of those classic incidents of my kid said this profound thing and I will use this as a springboard to detail my own views. I mean, yeah, like, it's not exactly very timely of her either. Like, this debate was last summer, but a fair bit we're finally getting around to, like, the biggest film of the last 10 years.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I intend watching it
it's
over the
good.
Weekend.
It's like, good. I don't think it's a classic or anything, but I didn't feel emasculated. I wasn't watching the screen and being outraged by what was happening on there. Like, it's a clever film. You know, it's... Shakira, like, is entitled to her opinion, of course, but it did... She went into this kind of weird side angle of, like, you know, men need to be... They need to know that they're able to be men and to provide. Like, this film does not put out the message that men can't do these things.
This film isn't anti-men. It's anti-toxicity and it's anti-patriarchy. It's about how patriarchy harms men. And so the first half of the movie where you see the Kens going around, it's not holding men to these ideas of masculinity and these really performative ideals of masculinity that don't make the Kens happy aren't introduced until they learn about patriarchy. So it's about femininity and it's about fun. It's also about how patriarchal masculinity is a performance that divides people. And Ken literally says, I'm not enjoying this. I thought patriarchy was about horses. It's misunderstanding the movie.
Okay, just one other thing I wanted to before we take a break. Both of you, I think we're interested in Eurovision and this thing is developing because we're getting closer to Eurovision and the Israeli participation in it. Where are we at, Dave, in relation to this?
We're about a month out, and we talked about this on The Last Word recently, and to quote The Hives, hate to say I told you so, I knew this would happen. A bunch of artists have banded together, including Ireland's Bambi Thug, also the UK's Ollie Alexander, and they have basically rejected calls to boycott this event. Israel are participating, people have been calling them to be thrown out. Eurovision organisers have held firm. The event is going ahead in Malmo in Sweden. And you've had a bunch of artists now come out and issue this collective statement. And if you want to know what the like a picture-perfect definition of the phrase word salad looks like, just look up this statement. It's all about saying, you know, oh, you know, we thought about it, but actually us being there is more important. And the unifying power of music, you know, is how we need to do this. They've had people from Palestine say, please don't do this. Please boycott this. It would mean so much to us, to the world. It would make a huge statement. And instead they've said, no, but we're going to be there anyway. I'm sorry, this is ego, this is selfish, this is people who want the platform, want the stage, and don't actually care about what is going on in the Middle East.
Yeah, and sorry to correct you, Ollie Alexander is one of the people who have rejected the boycott, and he has said he is going to go ahead and perform at Eurovision. But I think Ollie Alexander, it's really disappointing of them, but I think it's also highlighting the hypocrisy of the European Broadcasting Union, because in 2022 they banned Russia and Ukraine won by the public vote, so they are able to take stances against countries who they disagree with, and they're not taking this stance against Israel. Israel also put forward two songs that were deemed to be offensive and deemed to be talking about the genocide that is happening in a really hideous way, and they said if you submit more than two songs you'll be banned. They weren't banned. So I think Alexander, it's very disappointing. I do agree. I think the statement was so meaningless. I think there can be times where keeping cultural dialogue is important, not during a genocide where 30,000 people have been killed and 15,000 children have been killed, but there has also been boycotts of other things. So during apartheid in South Africa, there was a boycott of South African sport, and the idea was sport is about competition, it's about fairness, and this isn't fair. And even they could have taken that angle. But
well,
so
there were some musical icons who headed down to Sun City in South Africa to avoid the boycotts at the time. Lots of listener comments. Dead on, Matt. Pouring people out on the streets causes more hassle. Having longer opening hours will temper the night. I've lived in London for years and drinking culture is great and calmer with a longer opening. Another one says, pubs before the First World War were open 24 hours a day. They only started closing due to the blackouts. And here's one that let the young ones have their fun. We've had ours. It was epic. Oh, to go back. I didn't write that one myself. We'll be back with more of the week trending after this. One text says, I see you've got the trendy liberals on again. That must be a reference to Roe McDermott and Dave Hanratty, who are doing the week trending. But before we hear from them again, we're going to play a bit of a remarkable interview that took place between a BBC journalist, Stephen Sakur, and the president of Guyana, Irfan Ali.
That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you, as a head of state, went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there. Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon, a forest that we have kept alive, a forest that we have kept alive.
Does that give you the right?
Does that give you the right to lecture us on climate change? I am going to lecture you on climate change, because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world. And guess what? Even with our greatest exploration of the oil and gas resource we have now, we will still be net zero. Guyana will still be net zero. With all our exploration, still be net zero.
Powerful words, Mr. President.
I'm not completed as yet. I am not finished as yet. I am just not finished as yet. Because this is a hypocrisy that exists in the world. The world in the last 50 years has lost 65% of all its biodiversity. We have kept our biodiversity. Are you valuing it? Are you ready to pay for it? When is the developed world going to pay for it? Or are you in the pockets? Are you in the pockets of those who have damaged the environment? Are you in the pockets? Are you and your system in the pockets of those who destroyed the environment through the Industrial Revolution and now lecturing us? Are you in their pockets? Are you paid by them? Are you
So this is his excuse or explanation for oil and gas exploration to get the money. We're okay because we're net zero, because we're protecting the forest we have as well.
First of all, I just want to say thank you to that texter for calling us trendy.
Absolutely. Cheers, man. Thank you.
No, the longer interview of this is kind of incredible. And I have seen Irfan Ali speak before, and he's been very passionate about things like Britain, for example, needing to give reparations for people who were impacted by the slave trade. He's a very impressive man and an incredibly clear speaker, and was speaking about the fact that Guyana used to be the second poorest country in South America and is now, and also was under a dictatorship and has now become a democratic country, who are becoming prosperous, and he's really really focused on economic growth. They also inherited an incredibly bad deal with Exxon Oil from the last government, where they get about kind of 2%, I believe, of the profits from this oil. But they are going to be able to provide wealth for the country. They're going to be able to provide electricity and energy for the country. And another point that he made during the interview was that Guyana is 6 feet below sea level. So they're going to be hugely impacted by the climate change that this interviewer is accusing them of contributing to. And what he's trying to do is build wealth for the economy so that they can protect themselves for it. I do want to say there have been multiple allegations of fraud against Irfan Ali that I don't know enough about to make a judgment call. Also, there is a land claim by Venezuela over land in Guyana and the profits that are going to be made from this oil extraction. But I think his overall point that the West really needs to take responsibility for the impact they have on climate change and stop attacking developing countries and not being resentful of countries who are now making more money than them is important.
We love a gotcha. You know, like we love a heated exchange. I mean, the reason that this has gone viral is because you don't see this kind of exchange every single day. It's refreshing to see a politician or a world leader actually not just have something to say in response to a challenging question, but to be as passionate about it as he was. That's why these things take off. But of course, this leads to a culture war on social media and people take sides. Are you on the side of the journalist? You know, was he asking a direct question or was he arrogant? Was he pompous? Is he reflecting perhaps old school British values when it comes to looking at other countries and saying we should have that instead? Or was the guy incredibly good in his response and was he infallible? I don't think anybody is. It's a complex issue. But I enjoyed just seeing this kind of, like I say, this robust exchange, because like too often we will see someone just sit there and give you like, oh, well, that's a good question and here's a non-answer. So I enjoyed the exchange. I think that the culture war that's followed, I think, has been a little bit tempestuous, as you might expect.
Okay, let's move on to something else to finish. There's an issue in Paris in relation to migrants being moved. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this the Olympic Games, of course, is coming in a matter of months, I believe, and essentially similar to scenes that we saw here in Dublin before St. Patrick's Day, where people were moved out of areas because we don't want to upset the tourists. It's kind of a similar thing. Migrants were bussed out to temporary local government housing in a town in eastern France. Migrant aid workers have kind of sounded the alarm here, though, and they've said that this is likely the beginning of a broader effort. It's not just to make us look, you know, pristine and less problematic when the Olympics come to town and people coming from all around the world. This is actually reflective of a pretty negative attitude towards migrants and to looking after them. And of course, that is one of the hottest button issues in the world right now.
The Paris Olympics have been held effectively in Saint-Denis, which is the biggest immigrant centre in France.
Yeah.
A population about twice the size of Dublin, largely immigrant.
But the treatment of immigrants is so upsetting. Like, the tents had been forbidden in Paris, so these 50 people who were shipped out were sleeping under sheets. Many of the unhoused migrants in Paris are, of course, from African countries and also Afghanistan. And also there's a huge issue in France of unaccompanied teens being falsely accused of being adults, so they're refused rights like housing. So I think the approach to these people has just been so horrendous. But it is, as Dave said, it mimics what we ourselves did before the Biden visit. California has done this before the Super Bowl, taking unhoused people and shipping them out of the city so that tourists don't have to look at unhoused people.
I think it was the Chinese visit recently to San Francisco. Literally, the streets of San Francisco were cleared of all the people who've been living on the footpaths.
Again, and it does seem to disproportionately affect migrants of colour. So there is this kind of racial element to it as well, which France has obviously, unfortunately, developed a pretty terrible reputation for its racism against migrants.
But is this effective from a PR standpoint, because that's why this exists. It exists to make whether it's Olympic Games, whether it's a Super Bowl, to make it look perfect, quote unquote. But it's a Streisand effect, isn't it? Because like, if you're like, you know, like, let's hide this problem, but then of course these images will circulate immediately on social media. There'll be news reports. You can't hide from this kind of thing. It's in plain sight. And while some people will say yes, that's what should be done, many will not. Of course, it's not very humane. And I just wonder if at the end of the day, the people who organise the Olympics even care about the people on the ground. It seems like they don't. But I wonder, do people just kind of look the other way when it comes to this kind of thing, even though it's right in front of them?
Dave Hanratty and Roe McDermott, as ever, thank you. We'll see you again soon.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.